Hi, this is Xavier Schley from the Build Alaska podcast series. We've discovered some previously recorded legacy videos that were produced for the Construction Industry Progress Fund to help capture the contribution of a generation of Alaskans to the construction industry. We've digitized these videos to help preserve their content and make them available to the public.
But we'll start with the first one. How long have you lived in Alaska?
62 years. I came in May of 1946.
And when you came here, how did you come?
At that time, the best way, the easiest way to come, I was hired outside. I was told that if I'd come up here, I had a job. So I flew these what they called non-sked airlines. They were DC-3s at the Flyboys. This was right after World War II, and I'd been over in Europe World War II. And the Flyboys had saved their money and bought surplus. And they flew out of Seattle in surplus airplanes for about $50 cheaper than Alaska Airlines. So I came up on a surplus DC-3. We refueled at Annette Island and landed at Merrill Field, which was then a gravel field. On a DC-3.
And were you located here in Anchorage, or were you located in Fairbanks?
Here in Anchorage.
Here in Anchorage. And what was the job that you were brought up here to do?
Well, I was to go to work at that time, the name of the company was Lohman Equipment. They had, the Lohman family is an old family that goes way, way, way back. I'm primarily out of Nome. They were right after the war. Then one of the fellows was in the military, came up and purchased, made a deal with the Lohmans and purchased the company, bought into the company and started it. And we changed the name to Lohman Equipment. And that was hard to come up here. It was a three-person office, the manager and I was combination parts manager and service manager, and we had a receptionist, and so I came up here, and right on the corner, this property was on 6th and G, and there were two lots, and there were two houses on the corner lot, and the long had been a refurbished lumber shed was the next house. I lived in one of the two houses on G Street.
And what was it like back in 1946 when you got to Anchorage?
It wasn't much around. It was when they had a power short. We had candles, and I noticed in one of the parts bins. And that's because at 6 o'clock in the evening, about the time everybody were lighting up their stoves, every once in a while we'd have a power outage. But everybody was friendly. We were all new. A very small city, I think. 6,500 people, and 4th Avenue was the main avenue, and we were on 6th, and people told us we were too far south, we needed to get over on 4th, we were out of the business district.
And your equipment, the company, what was the competition like back then? What other competition did you have?
Well, there were three major tractors, everything was kind of based on it. You had a crawler tractor, and Yukon Equipment was the Alice Chalmers dealer, or at that time Lohman Equipment. And Northern Commercial Company had the Caterpillar dealership, and a company called the Carrington Company out of Seattle. And up here they had the International Harvester tractors. These were the crawler tractors. And then you had stuff in between to make that you would sell along with. So lots of things, because one, there wasn't much, there wasn't too much available, and there wasn't that much going to where you needed a lot of heavy equipment. And there was an awful lot of surplus coming off of the military, the various places where the Army had been.
So, in 1946, when you were starting, did you have a background in construction, or was this a new area for you?
I had just gotten a degree in engineering. It was ag engineering, but majored in mechanical. I just finished my education at Lincoln, Nebraska, University of Nebraska. And because I was working around farm equipment, I got a deferment to go to work for industry, and I worked very briefly for International Harvester Company in Chicago at their tractor works. And then my draft board said, we need you elsewhere. And so I was drafted, went, and was in the ordnance department, which is pertains to tanks and that sort of thing, all through the war.
So your background was really on the equipment side.
Yes.
And when you were getting started in 1946, what were some of the bigger projects over the next, let's say, decade that
The people with the money, the thing we'd watch for the newspapers on the early in the spring was how much money was the Corps of Engineers getting for construction. The one big thing was you had Elmendorf, and they called it Fort Richardson and Elmendorf, but there was a fence. And then outside of the, or between Elmendorf and Fort Richardson, and then Fort Richardson was nothing more than there were six big warehouses scattered so they would never be in line for a bomber thing. And that was called the DC area, or displaced cantonment. They were displaced warehouses. And then they built up Fort Richardson. A friend of mine became acquainted with right off, Stock and Grove. I don't know if they remember the AGC or not, but old man Stock set up a company, and Grove was his son-in-law, and John and I were good friends, and they did the dirt work on the Fairbanks, on the powerhouse at on Fort Richardson, and then a lot of 200-man barracks. And then Elmendorf was converted from wooden buildings to concrete buildings and permanent-type structures for the families and for the officers. And that was the main thing. That was the main construction going on.
Your company, did they start in Anchorage, or were you start in Fairbanks?
The company itself that was purchased out, they had both office in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and their main office was Seattle. Just about everybody that was up here had a Seattle office, because you had to have somewhere where you could do your financing, and you also consolidated your shipments. Everything came up by Alaska steam from Seattle to Seward. Stopped at Juneau and Cordova and Longinan, and then just finished disloading at Seward, put on the Alaska Railroad, brought into Anchorage. But the headquarters was Seattle, and that applied to everybody.
So your time here, has it been in Anchorage solely, or have you moved?
No, in 52, they had the Tongass Timber purchase, and they sold made available all this logs down in Southeastern. So I moved down to Southeastern because they were building the Ketchikan pulp mill, and I called on the loggers. And I made my residence in Juneau, and then I called on the loggers and the municipalities. We, in addition to construction equipment, sold lots of stuff for cities. And I lived there for a year, and into Seattle for part of a year, and then back here in 54. And in 54, I took over management of the Anchorage store.
At what point did the company become Yukon?
They were purchased from the Lomans in 1945, September, and they. And so they changed the name slightly from Lohman Commercial to Lohman Equipment, which helped them retain the franchises, because everybody that got out of the Army wanted to go to a manufacturer and say, hey, let me be your dealer, because there weren't any. And so they hung on to the franchises. And then the Lohman said, we'll give you 5 years to do, and then you got to change your name. And the thing those days was you would come out with catalogs, good thick, catalog with gave the specifications of your equipment, no prices or anything, but give your customers something to refer to. And since we needed to come up with a new catalog, we elected to change the name to pick the Principal River and change the name to Yukon Equipment, and that from the Lohman, and that was 3 years after, probably Probably 49, something like that.
And did the ownership change, or did the ownership change prior to your coming in?
The ownership, the Lohman equipment had been had purchased from the Lohmans, and the president had been the sales manager of the Alice Chalmers company. He came up here right after the war. He was loaned to the war, as were so many business people. He was loaned with the war down in the ordnance, down to tank Fort Knox, where they handle all trained for tanks and all that. And he was loaned for the duration. As soon as the war ended, he bailed out, and he made his station in Portland. He made his first trip up through Alaska, came back and made a deal with, got a couple guys to help him, made a deal with the Lohmans to start to change the company. And their offices were in the same offices in the Coleman building, but it was a change made by the, and then he was with the company for about 8-9 years, and then his wife had problems or one thing or another. They sold out, and we were encouraged from the beginning to buy stock in the company. And we all, there's a number of us that bought stock, so that's how I got.
Well, from the time you joined it, you've seen great evolution in equipment, haven't you?
Yes.
And in your company. Would you care to share with us some of the things that you've seen?
Well, real early, you really couldn't make it just selling crawler tractors. There was so much stuff on Elmendorf coming in, and there wasn't that big a road building. It really wasn't that big yet. So we were distributors for iron fireman furnaces, which is nothing but a coal-fed furnace. We were distributors for just all kinds of things, and we sold welders and stuff related to the construction machinery. Welders came to my mind first, but I'm trying to think. We even had hand tools, just anything we could sell to. And there was a little bit of gold mining starting up out of Fairbanks, so we had hand mechanics tools and things like that.
Well, tell us that you started with Alice Chalmers, but along the line you've added additional lines, and how's that evolved?
Well, Alice Chalmers then kind of got all, we had both the construction machinery and the farm machinery contracts, and their construction machinery was bought into by the Fiat out of Italy. That was called Fiat Alice, and then and they still made the big tractors. We introduced the HD41, which was the largest tractor in the world at the time, and had Usabelli coal mine using those, and then we had several others. And one of these pictures on that showed one of that 41 coming through, and awful and lots bigger. And then Fiat and Alice Chalmers, they decided to close things out, and we elected to kind of mutually to go our separate ways, and the farm machinery went to some German company, I think it's Deutsche Alice they call it then, and that. So then we were taking on the case line of equipment, which was smaller crawlers and little dozers and. What some of the stuff we referred to as the homesteader special, because they take them out and clean up their, get into their homestead, and just build them little roads, what they needed out in the bush.
And about when did you make the switch from Case to, or not from Case, from Alice Chalmers to Case?
That would have probably been, it was right after the pipeline was done. In fact, there was there was a company that were going to had talked to Alice Chalmers and Fiat Alice into letting them have the contract, because they could do so much more with it than we could. And they were going to bring they had a guy who was going to design them a pipe layer, the side boom out of a tractor walks along the pipes hanging. I think you've seen pictures of the way side booms. So they decided to take we should parts companies, and we were most happy too, and we came out real good on that, and but it wasn't too long before they pretty much just folded. They didn't really have a store in Alaska, so that was pretty much the end of the Fiat Alice line. We had sold one of the big 41s, and from the contractors themselves, was Green, and bought one, and it went up to Fairbanks on a road job. Of course, they were very successful contractors and real fine people to work with.
And when you got into Case, is that your primary line now, or do you have?
Well, we got into Case because there was a guy that bought. There was a company called American Tractor Company, and he got a bunch of surplus stuff after the war and started building a real small crawler. And but he ran out of money, and Case took over, and it became the Case Tractor. And then since there's been so many changes in the industry, and Case was bought out by New Holland, which make farm stuff, and it's Case NH or NHC or something like that, and they in turn were bought by somebody else, and I've lost track of, even though I'm in talking to Maury all the time, the ownerships of these various companies are hardly recognize them. And we had a big backhoe we called a Drott excavator, and that was purchased by, Link Belt. And so Link Belt makes for about three companies and puts each company's name they want on the machines, and there's so much interchange with today with then there's very few about the only true tractor dealers left. They're still making them in the U.S. and not all over. Well, Alice or Case still has them, but they're made under other names. But I think John Deere and Caterpillar are about the only two that are still manufactured in the U.S. And even Caterpillar's engines are built in Japan. So much of the stuff comes out of Japan now, and Komatsu and all those.
And so in your almost 60 years, more than 60 years, you've seen a tremendous change in the equipment. Would you like to describe some of the things that came along and seemed to revolutionize maybe construction, particularly civil construction?
Well, hydraulic did an awful lot. Everything was cable when we first invented it, and backhoes. In fact, the very original shovels, like up and up on the one area had equipment was the coal mines up above Palmer, and the shovels were all cable operated, and then they. Then they got to turn the shovel around and still run it, but that became a pull shovel. It was a shovel, and then it changed to backhoe. But those are all cable operated. And the totem poles, which was a combination power unit and a scraper type thing, then went to, had some cable, and the common way of moving dirt was with a cat in a can. So many miles you used the truck, and so many less miles you used a cat in a can, which was a tractor pulling a scraper, and everything was all cable operated. Alice Chalmers was one of the first to come in with hydraulics, and they made a deal with AeroQuip, and you came up with you could repair your own hydraulics, and that just changed the picture completely, because it was it just changed it. And there was no more cable. We had at one time, we had a line of cable we sold. Well, everybody did, but we had, and we sold, our last one was called Out of Fuel and Iron, and then we finally just went out of the cable business entirely. And the manufacturer came up wanting to know why we were giving up the cable, and this was that right after the earthquake, and we were sitting in the petroleum club up in the top of what is now the Hilton, looking out over where they're that all being smoothed over and redone behind the between the 6th and 3rd. And there was the only piece of equipment out there. There were some dozers, some rubber-tired motor scrapers running around, and but the only thing with the cable on it was a crane. It was just parked there. And I said, that's why we're giving it up. There's nobody using it anymore. And that was probably the biggest change. And now they're getting electronically controlled things. And I've been out 15 years, and so I'm, some of that's getting away from me.
What do you recall as maybe the first project that you were involved? Maybe a contractor came in and said, I've got this project, I need some equipment, and you worked with them on it. Do you have anything like that happen?
I can't think what it would be. We Mr. Stock of Stock and Grove, we got along real good right off the bat, and he we furnished him a tractor, and he was but he was doing various work. He had some work out on Fire Island. They had to, they built a facility for an FAA tower on Fire Island. It was on a government chunk of land. And I had a contractor that wanted to, they got a repeat phone system where you, if you call on the Kenai Peninsula, they had them a repeater station on the top of Mount Susitna. And I figured out how a guy could take the hydraulics off of the dozer by locking up the dozer and pulling a little motor scraper. And he choppered that up, carried it up on a helicopter, and then a couple trips, and then put it together. And then they had a man and wife living up there running this computer, this transfer station, and then electronics caught up with them, and they didn't need it anymore. Flew them down. That's probably the only thing that looked different. It was pretty small, but helped somebody out.
Did your firm get involved at all in the building of the Parks Highway? Did you see anything from that?
I'm trying to think who I don't know that we had. I don't know. We had some motor scrapers and tractors with the GEM, joint venture of GEM Rivers. There was a guy and a Dick Rivers Construction, and they were in with one of the contractors, and then a local contractor, Prestwood and Oaks, a guy named him. And they had, and we had the motor scrapers, and the guys up in Fairbanks, Con Frank, and some of his people had the bridge. It was a bridge over the highway, right?
In Nanana?
Huh?
Was it the Nanana?
No, this far. It's closer to Anchorage. I'm trying to think what bridge that was. Can't remember now.
What about the pipeline? Was your company impacted by the pipeline?
Well, we had taken on the DuPont explosive line just about the time that they were just right after about the time they hit Swanson River, and there was a contractor or a company out of Texas that had that made a little drill bit for seismic work. They drill a little hole and put cans screwed together of explosives, and then shoot it and measure the vibrations and plot the ground. And the company in Texas happened to—it was so seasonal with them, they didn't want to be the dealer anymore. And a dealer sent a man up here who had come out of Nobel one time, and the state mining office suggested he come and see me, and we wound up with a DuPont explosive line. And then when the earthquake hit, we We had a lot of rock to move on. We did real well. It was ideal because of the subsidence. What do you call it?
Subsidence.
Of all that rock, we saw lots of dynamite, and then the pipeline itself, the Caterpillar had cut a deal with the Bechtel Corporation, and it was all, and part of their agreement was they would protect them, and it was all Caterpillar. We had an airline, a Joy air compressors and track line down on the tank farm down at Valdez, and then we had the dynamite line for the pipeline itself, which was a very nice contract. We sold, it was thousands of pounds of powder on that. And that was our big thing, was lots and lots and lots of dynamite and some of this air stuff and miscellaneous. Then at the same time, we were still trying to take care of the customers, and we did a better job, I think, anybody else in taking the care of the customers, non-pipeline related. So it was a good venture.
Did you notice a lot of business, as you say, the non-pipeline, but Anchorage at that time was booming as well as the pipeline?
Yes. We had one of the things after, see, when I came here, the city limits was Gamble, or East G, as they called it at the time, Gamble on the east, and 15th on the south. And all the sewer and water were laid. Well, then, as the town expanded, they needed sewer and they needed water, and you had to do more than just trying to drill your own well. In fact, we sold small water pumps you could put down and put in your own. So they formed PUDs, public utility districts. Then they could bond this district, which bonded everybody in the district. And then they lay sewer and water, so there's a lot of sewer and water lines laid, just if you step up and think about it, from 15th on. And there was kind of a couple pictures on some of those pictures of a guy trying to dig below the 12th Avenue towers pulling his little backhoe and thing through the dirt. And then finally the merge of the PUDs, and we became a borough. And then the borough was in charge of building all these sewer and water lines outside, and then eventually they merged and became the municipality of Anchorage for the whole thing. But that was good business, and there were backhoes, lots of backhoes and trenching equipment, naturally laying water and sewer.
How is it? I know you've been a member of AGC for UConn for more than 50 years. And by the way, thank you and congratulations. How was it that you became involved with AGC?
Well, the company, I was not a principal at the time or anything, but it was just, they were a great believer in helping organizations. And the AGC was the major, it was just a good, just a natural to be, have it and be, be acquainted with the people that were using the equipment. Better way of getting acquainted with them. And we would go to all their functions. And on Saturday mornings at the annual AGC, at their annual meeting, they had about a three-day meeting. And we always picked the Saturday morning. And we invited the principals of the contractors to a breakfast. And Jim would have a little memo of us, a little pocket knife for a token or something. And just tried to stay in touch with them and try to work with them.
That's good. This is a question, and I don't want to put you ill at ease, but tell me one of your favorite dinner party type stories about your years working with contractors or in construction.
What's this now?
Tell us a story. Do you have any stories you'd like to tell about dealing with contractors or projects or something that you found just very interesting at the time and you'd like to tell the story? Maybe a story you tell your grandchildren? Or
I haven't got any.
You haven't got any. Well, okay, that.
I don't know what would be interesting. I guess the things that I think is being kind of a little different in the ordinary was they came up with some new helicopters. Boeing had a helicopter and somebody else had a helicopter. Brought them up, and so they, I'm trying to think of the name of the company. They're based at McMinnville, Oregon now, with a big airline or air freight. In fact, that's where the Spruce Goose is anchored. But this, they wanted a demonstration, and they wanted an 18,000-pound load they could carry. We had the closest of any of our competitors. We had a 14,000-pound small cage crawler. It was big enough that, and they, if you went out and we had one of the oil companies that wanted to develop a spot on the chain partway, and you see what you had to do. You had to break the tractor down, and then haul the pieces up, and put it together with this 14,000, 18,000 pound capacity with a chopper. You made one trip, and you go to work. And they came to us and says, "Hey, we want to pick up one of your tractors and fly it around town." And I don't think so. Then we talked some more, and finally I got a hold of our service manager. He says, "Yeah, I can put some hooks on it that won't pull off." And I said, "Better not." But so we did, and the company still has them. After it was all over with, they sent us, Boeing sent us a picture of this helicopter pulling us, and they angled it off. They were out by Merrill Field or International Airport anyway, so they took out and flew it around where they weren't flying over people, and circled it and had about a 3-day demonstration of bringing various equipment or various interested customers, they thought. And that was the one thing that was different than anybody else.
And that, you gave us some of those pictures, didn't you? That was the helicopter. Yeah.
And we sent that picture back to Case, and they said, "That's the way we deliver tractors here in Alaska."
Tell me about one or two of your favorite industrial professionals, people that you've worked with, and that you just say, you mentioned Stock. And some people like that you said, those are good people, I enjoy working with them.
Yeah, I think you're more successful people. They're like Green Construction, some of those bigger ones. You just, they're very honorable people to work with. And it was actually a pleasure. You were willing to do what you could. And I met some nice people.
And I realize that you've been out of construction or out of the industry for 15 years. But based on your years, been 50 years working with UConn, and now looking back, what are some of the challenges that you see Maury having to fight?
Beg pardon?
What are some of the challenges that you see for UConn equipment and others?
Maury's done a real fine job with that company. I feel proud to tell people I'm the guy that got him in there. Those things, sometimes they don't work out, sometimes they work out very well. And he's going out a little different than I am, but at the same time he has a very successful operation. I don't know. And they run a clean operation and are honest. And know if you make a mistake, you admit it and make it good, even if it costs you some money. And he's the same way. So I think you have to. and develop a trust with your customers, even as the customers might change it.
Wait, that'll go about four times.
Okay. It's been pretty quiet.
Well, of course they can't tell the door is closed, but then.
Oh.
Okay.
I don't know if I've answered your question, but.
Yeah. When you started, or early in the year, it was an employee-owned company, right?
Yeah, we had we all encouraged to buy stock. It was always a corporation.
Yeah. Is it still that way today?
Well, they about 8-10 years ago, they sold the company to Western Power. I kind of had the blessings of the manufacturers or encouragement, and there was a company here that went bankrupt called starts with this, had it right on the tip of my tongue.
Sorry.
Sold
Summit?
Huh?
Summit Construction?
No, it was a contract. I mean, a machinery.
Oh, machinery.
Sahlberg Equipment. And they were heavy in safety stuff and everything. But then Sahlberg went bankrupt, and Western Power bought them, and Western Power had finally wound up with all the case dealers on the West Coast. And I saw this happen with Ellis Chalmers when they gave it all to one company, and then something happened to the company, and then what do you do? And you're really hurting. But Western Power, the president of the company was just, he just milked, creamed it, just took it all. And they got to be in real bad shape, but a couple of years ago I was real discouraged because, and they were having their troubles, and Maury was having these troubles with them because they were just, this company was, but then about a year ago then, they got so bad that Case, I think encouragement of some of the suppliers, encouraged Maury to put together a package, and he has, and just a year ago, he finally finished his last bit of all the paperwork you go through to break away from a company. See, when I left the company or whatever, when Morris said, you just sell the stock, but there was no stock transfer. So, a year ago, Maury was able to take complete control of the company. So it's still once again, UConn Equipment, and this company just this month, finally, we just found out. They have taken bankruptcy, but they were extremely hard to do business with, but they weren't. And Maury was just beside himself trying to keep things together, because it's just not the way he operates. So they broke away, and now he owns it, and then the way the nature of the ownership and everything is, I don't know, and I purposely not pressured him to say, well, how you doing? But I think it's in he and his wife's name, but he's the owner.
I'm done. Heather, do you have anything?
I can't think of anything.
No? Larry?
I can't think of anything either. He's really educated me.
Well, Glenn, thank you very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thanks for the cookies.
We'll get you a copy.
Okay.
So you can see, and then you can forever say, that isn't what I said, I got a tape. You can protect yourself.
There was a picture in there, one of them. We had this small machine, and the refineries liked them. We had two over in a refinery, and they shut down once a year to do a workover or something. But then this was an ideal little tool for them, but we had these little, it was a little draught crane, carry lift or something, I think they call it, just a real stub crane thing, and a welder out in the Spinard area bought one. But here was this picture we've got is there was a bear got loose or something, and they got it caught, and they got it rolled up in a chain link fencing, and so we've got a picture of this thing picking them up and moving the bear in. He said it really wasn't the way they were equipped with the equipment to do.
I'll have to make sure I check that one out. Maybe we'll get that one for the magazine.
That sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
Unless you know what you're looking at.
Yeah, you wouldn't. I wouldn't have recognized it.
There's just something hanging off a crane.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Very nice to meet you, sir. And interesting.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.